Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this November the 11th on the West Coast, now November the 12th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. Like to also welcome those listening on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, all those folks in the U.S. military who are celebrating Veterans Day, as well as those listening on blogtalkradio.com. Lots happening these days, and I can tell you that we're going to have some interesting revelations coming out on the Fort Hood story. Trust me, there's some shocking revelations going to come out there. And if you've been following the world financial situation, there is a list of some 163 people in the Senate, in the administration, and even a few people in the Supreme Court that are targeted for some future arrests. And the background actually somewhat ties into what just happened at Fort Hood. We've discussed that on a few of our recent shows, and we'll be bringing more information to you as soon as we can solidify a few facts. But I can tell you there are some shocking twists that are going to be revealed. Now, tonight, we invite back to Evident Footprints a gentleman that's got a career in radio broadcasting, as well as a TV show that he produces on local access in his part of the country. He is a talk show host on republicbroadcasting.org, hosts his own show, which is called Rick Adams Uncensored, and he's been on Evident Footprints a number of times, hasn't been on for a while, but he's recently produced an historical documentary, which is available on DVD, and we're going to talk about that tonight. My very good friend, and in a way, a mentor in broadcasting, my mentor, Rick Adams. Rick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's always my pleasure to appear here.
Well, boy, I'm so glad the audience gets to hear you over the mic as opposed to the telephone.
The last yeah, time, I am too.
Last time on the show, we had to fight through that, and we're always sitting ducks when we're using telephones, you know. Especially when the truth comes out. You've been doing a lot of work to help the Patriot movement for those new listeners out there.
Yes.
And you have been somewhat of a biblical scholar, although you downplay that quite a bit. But I mean, the wisdom just comes out, and I really feel that you're anointed as a talk show host. You've got this velvety voice that that people would die for to have in their professional careers, and it just comes so naturally for you. But you also have a very professional demeanor. You're the prototypical heckler handler. You know, many comedians just shrink when they get a heckler, but you seem to be able to just smooth out the rough conversations on the air, and you do it flawlessly, and it's really a reflection of your character. But I'm also very impressed with your historical knowledge, and that goes beyond the printed word as well. Why don't you tell us what you've been up to lately?
One of the things I did, well, actually, it really wasn't so lately, but I've just begun to disseminate the DVD version of the documentary that I put together a year ago or so, and that was in 08, and we're working on it for about a year before that. And that was something that I wanted to do for a long time. You know, having heard so much propaganda and all of it virtually as disinformation and misinformation concerning involvement on the part of the United States in World War II and this new interventionism, this new police, you know, of the world, policemen of the world role for the United States that really started to get underway in World War I under Wilson, sort of prodded me. You know, I had like this tinge of conscience to do something to try to set the record straight, Don.
Mm-hmm.
Try to straighten out people in fundamental ways, not exhaustively and not as a long involved process, because I knew first of all, we only had so much time to air a documentary on local cable access, and that was the initial stages of my production to get that done there, you know, to use the studio facilities and the editing system to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
But first I had the thought, you see. First I had the desire. First I had the intention to get this out. You know, there was Tom Brokaw's propaganda book, The Greatest Generation, and so much had come out from different sources, so many books and so much media disinformation. Hollywood, you know, naturally being the least authoritative on any, you know, documented history or historical event. Anywhere and any subject, of course, you know, that sort of added to the confusion and propaganda that we've been fed all of our lives about war, and particularly World War II. So I decided I was going to tackle it myself, and I used as my source material, among other sources, I used as my mentor, so to speak, and someone that I had admired through the years, Professor Dan Smoot, who was an Americanist, patriot, former FBI agent, and you know, one who was a scholar in the Constitution and in English and American history, and one that I admired greatly, whom I happened to was lucky enough to get volumes of his radio and TV broadcasts, actually, the Dan Smoot Report, going back to the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I managed to pick up some of the texts of those broadcasts. And I'll tell you, Don, that source alone, in addition to many others, managed to inspire me to do what I did. And so what the finished product was, we entitled World War II, The Untold Story, America's Legacy of Betrayal. And without getting into all of the, you know, specific details about Illuminism and Zionism and globalism and all of the people, the key players that, you know, put together these wars, and particularly any specific information about Hitler and others, I decided to just deal with what I could deal with that was documented, that would set the stage for an elementary, introductory understanding of what happened because of the United States being involved in that war, and previously World War I, and none of it was for the good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I started to see that we have been lied to so much, and the people we thought were our heroes turned out to be scoundrels, and the people that we were told were scoundrels really turned out to be heroes. It turned out to be, you know, the shall we say, paragons of virtue and honesty and integrity. So that's why I put together that movie, that documentary film, and I did it with reference to these Dan Smoot reports, going back to Pearl Harbor, for instance, and back to World War I and Wilson's alleged concern for world peace and his desire to bring about you know, a heaven on earth type of missionary concept of democracy and the end of war. And I started to look back, and I started to realize this was just absolute rubbish. We've been fed propaganda, and we've been fed nonsense all of these years. And, you know, without someone to bring the record straight in some audiovisual format rather than just a book, I thought that, you know, it would be an injustice for me to sit back and not do anything about it. So I did put together the talents that the Lord has given me in my desire to go on camera and bring to the people these messages in a very informative and yet, you know, somewhat entertaining way. My, you know, my field, like others, is not to entertain. I'm not one of these, you know, these so-called great celebrity talk show hosts that you'll hear on the lamestream media networks and that you'll see on television. And that's what most are about, as you know, propaganda, but entertainment. And I don't do that. I just try to use the time, the precious airtime that we have, to try to bring people to an understanding of facts, an understanding of things that are going on in our world and our nation and how they happen to be and what is wrong with our country today. Now, as a result of that, I produced this 75-minute documentary, World War II, The Untold Story. And I'll tell you, Don, it really and truly just amazed me at the knowledge that had been put together by people like Dan Smoot, you know, in 1960, for instance, you know, mm-hmm. almost 50 years ago now, before our time, that is not only something that we, as Americans, probably don't even know about, but things that we don't even know about our own constitutional Republican history and how it was subverted by men like E. Mandel House and Woodrow Wilson and the Council on Foreign Relations and all of these powerful interlocking relationship groups that ran America on behalf of the powerful elite. You see, these multi-billionaire bankster gangsters, as we call them, or gangster banksters. And so that's where I am, and that's what we've done. And like I say, I make it available on my program. Hope to have our website up one of these days soon so people can just order directly from there, you know. But that's just an introductory remark about how I started, to answer your question, and why I did this. And maybe we can get into what's contained in these studies.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I would love to do that. Now, a couple of things flood through my memory banks as you're talking. You know, I've done a few genealogical pieces on some political candidates, past and present.
Yes, of course.
And of course, I had to go back into history. I found myself many times going back to the days even before 1776, but I found that pretty much from Abraham Lincoln's time forward, I found this plan underway, and I think it was all the prelude to what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered something really, really interesting and yet very obscure. It was a comment Teddy Roosevelt made upon the assassination of William McKinley.
Mm-hmm.
And it alluded to the fact that he knew who did it and that it was planned. It was to happen. And he referenced something that almost became a scandal and said, well, McKinley wouldn't have known about that. And it really threw up a red flag. And as I started researching Roosevelt himself, and then we're talking about Teddy here, not Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
I found that this secret business arrangement that we come to discover as we get deeper into these issues was there in the shipping companies. In other words, Roosevelt himself was running two shipping lines that he had put in the name of his son Kermit. And this facilitated everything that transpired after that. It led directly to the infiltration of the banksters who became the Federal Reserve. This was 10 years prior to the Federal Reserve actually being established. And so you could see that pattern.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
You know, we don't have the luxury of film to look at, to see these things happening. But the records are there, which is amazing. And since the records are there, you asked this rhetorical question, and I'm sure you must have asked yourself the same questions a million times while you were doing the research for your project, is that if these facts are there, why were we lied to? Why were these covered up? And why did they do such a poor job hiding them? They're really there if you know what you're looking for, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And you find a little tidbit. And one thing that set me off was this remark that that Roosevelt had made. I mean, he was a made man. He knew he was going to be the next president and sort of made this sarcastic remark about McKinley, mm-hmm. where most people, in the true sense of the word, would grieve the loss of a president, especially through an assassination.
Yes.
Like we did when Kennedy was assassinated. You know, the country's heart was broken. And we have the same people who were at work prior to and during World War II, don't we?
Absolutely. The families and the... I think we can probably narrow it down primarily to families like the Rothschild families, and them in particular. You know, the ancient patriarch, Meyer Amschel Rothschild, and his sons that he sent out into Europe and then out into America to take over the economies of those nations. And you remember the famous statement that Rothschild reportedly made regarding politics and gold, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
He actually said that I don't care who makes the rules as long as I own the gold, in so many words.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the gold and I make the rules. And if I own the gold, then I own the people. The politicians are just front men. They don't matter. They're nothing but foolish figureheads and puppets on a string, you know, puppets on a chain. And boy, I'll tell you, no matter what your ideology might be or your preconceived thoughts, it certainly adds up over the last couple of centuries, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And they made sure that they put the appropriate mottos and phrases in the history books so that we, as young children, would grow up thinking that somehow we may have a chance someday to become president of the United States.
Yes, they did.
What
any man, any man can do it, right?
Oh, yes. Even B.O. can do it, can he? The long-legged Mac Daddy.
You know, yeah, right. I mean, and that's a good point you bring up, because I remember in my time when we were hearing about this guy, Jimmy Carter, and he was a guy of obscurity, relatively speaking, like this Obama guy was a few years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever heard of him. Nobody ever cared. No one ever knew him. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and all of these publications started to put his face, you remember, his face on the cover of their magazines. And they started to make him who would be the prototype of the next election. They put him there for a reason. They made us think deeply in our conscious and then our subconscious mind that we were going to have a break from the previous policies of corruption and Watergate and, you know, Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford and all of that. And we're going to have another fresh face, another change, as you remember. And I remember it because I was fairly young then, but I was still, of college age.
Mm-hmm.
I had just gone through college in 1975, and then I became involved with groups like the Birchers and others who started bringing some very interesting information that I didn't see anywhere in the media. And I realized that either one was true or the other was true. They both can't be true. You know, that there is a conspiracy, that there is a plan, if you will, that there is a group of men who sit down and actually plot the affairs and actions of nations. And it made sense, Don. And then I read Carol Quigley's book, or about as much of it as I could stand. You know, I didn't read all 1,300 pages. I didn't feel I had to. I started looking at it and seeing the book Tragedy and Hope as a confession, an admission on the part of this man, Professor Quigley, who boasted about how he was involved with these globalists and these internationalists, interventionists, and how they were going to remake the world. They were going to remake the world for the better. admitting there was a conspiracy, a plan, a group of men who ruled the world. And so, you know, of course, people like that were largely ignored, and studies about them, exposures of them, were kept out of the pages of the New York Times and so forth, and any reference to them was always treated with scorn and derision, as you know, by people who would talk about them as some conspiracy nutcakes, crackpots, you know, like us. People who talk that way are a little bit six short of a dozen, you see. Mm-hmm. Now, they never refuted anything. They never tried to. All they did was sow that concept, that seed of doubt in the public's mind. Should the public start getting wind of these things, like presidents who were made and then taken down, you know, mm-hmm. kingmakers and kingbreakers. So I think that sort of begins to even answer your first question as to how is all of this possible? How is it possible in a political sense, without getting even into the scriptural understanding, how is it possible that people can be kept in the dark on all of this and not know anything? Well, there you go. He who controls the gold really rules. And when they control the money system, and they make money off of money, that is not real money, but counterfeit money, which, of course, is a form of instrument of debt, then they know that they can buy the media, they can buy academe, they can buy college professors and university chairmen. In fact, they even install them at Harvard and Yale and places like that. So they would spout their line and give us these impressive studies and reports and exposures of theories and theses and ideas with which they would then propel our foreign policy and our domestic policy. So we didn't know any better. Who would know any better? Just trust them, because they are the experts. And after all, if some newspaper says it's so, well, it must be so, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they charge an arm and a leg to go, to attend their institutions, so that makes it legitimate.
Yes, that's exactly right. So that even, I think, answers your question about how is it possible to deceive the people of the world at a time from generation to generation. Then in the 1890s, 1900s, when McKinley was assassinated, you know, there were very few means of communication. And the newspapers were already becoming bought and paid for by these Rothschild agents in America. And although there were, I don't know how many, I think there were over 90 wire services in the early 1900s, Don. And then they started falling. They started getting absorbed and bought out, just as the movie studios were and the radio networks were. And they started getting taken over, and they all started towing the line about how America had a destiny to fulfill. Their destiny, of course, for us, that was to be the policemen of the world, to make sure we were the good cop on the beat. And that meant sending men into uniform, men into war, to kill and be killed, all for this dream, this hope, which, of course, was a lie. It was a total lie, a total hoax upon the planet. And some people figured it out a little early on in the game, like General Smedley Butler and people of that sort who understood what was going on and who began to uncover these documents and these secret meetings that were being held. So that's why, you know, today, having been through Veterans Day, you know, people who are listening a little bit earlier on the West Coast and so forth know that our veterans certainly deserve our prayers and support, but we must also, to be honest with them, we must do them a true service and not just lie to them as these talk show hosts, these neocon talk show hosts, these bought and paid for corrupt talk show hosts all over the roadmap do. They lie to these veterans. They make them think that they're actually serving their country when they go to war, dying. But they're not serving their country. They're serving another country. And they're serving a system of Antichrist that is building the blocks of the house of the New World Order. I mean, they're making it possible to topple governments, topple systems, topple nations in order to bring them in line with the New World Order. And isn't that what Rothschild did when he financed the revolution in Europe and particularly the French Revolution, Don?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can look at any of the major world wars that occurred and make that connection. They had ways of masking it, of course. World War II ended up almost being a carbon copy of World War I in many ways. They just had different people playing the roles, and
right.
and they expanded their control.
That's the idea. Create a problem, and then you offer the solution.
Yes.
And that is what they did.
Now, you mentioned Jimmy Carter. I just want to jump back, return back to that for a moment.
Sure.
Isn't it... Joseph Kennedy said he always knew he was going to have two sons become president, and there was quite a bit of speculation that he very likely fathered or sired Jimmy Carter. And you can see the Kennedy teeth. You can see the Kennedy hair. He's remarkably like the other Kennedys, in appearance. Of course, his accent is quite a bit different. But this is the throwback to this rash of Southern presidents. It's as though this was planned out probably from the time of Lincoln's assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've had a few Northern presidents over time, but basically. Things seemed to shift, and a lot of that had to do with the control of the textile industries and the control of the oil companies. A lot of that came out, even though you had Northerners controlling those companies, they set up their shop, so to speak, even the Rockefellers, I would say, by spreading themselves out, by procreating, with almost anybody from some of the accounts that I've heard. Just to get their bloodline build up throughout this country.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look today, and I know in Ohio, in certain places, there were people, we've got Yaleys, Skull and Bones people that came out of nowhere and were
right.
transplanted into different areas. And
that's right.
This is a repeated pattern that I find. If it works,
you might as well repeat it, right?
yeah. It's a cookie-cutter technique is mm-hmm. what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they do it on the basis of selling us, like you pointed out, the prestige of some of the Ivy League schools, that these are the experts, and if you went to Yale to study law, then you must really know your stuff, or the same with Harvard. Yet in my research, I found that these institutions are extremely corrupt in how they portray the benefactors of their libraries and their museums and how much they've worked together to commit fraud on the public. Mm-hmm. And again, this has been something that's surfaced in the specific today research that I'm doing on these genealogies.
Wow, that's fascinating.
You know, it's almost scary in a sense. That this has been going on so long, and no one really ever spoke up about it till now. I mean, it's happening quite a bit, and people are waking up to this. So I want to let you know that I appreciate the work that you're doing. I haven't seen your DVD yet, as we were speaking about off the air.
Right.
But I've heard you talk about it, and of course, I know the knowledge that you bring to your radio show. And I'd like to give you the opportunity to talk about that and where you can, if, you know, maybe this is not appropriate for you, but if you can draw some analogies as to what's happening today, things that you discovered that you see repeated again today, because I can tell you I found that in my own work.
Sure, I would be glad to for you, Don. Thank you. And you are quite a scholar yourself, and I think you certainly have a lot more knowledge than people might even think at first glance. And you know, one of the things with knowledge is you try to relate it to the masses. And I think one of the reasons that the other side, you know, it's not necessarily left or right, but it is the enemy of our Lord and the enemy of our people that control us, that control our minds. What makes them so successful? Is the fact that they they use the mass media in a very LCD manner, if I may say so. You know, a lowest common denominator.
Mm-hmm.
They throw up images in our minds and sow those images to make us react in a Pavlovian fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Today, if you even mention the name of Hitler, for instance, all of a sudden it conjures up all sorts of unimaginable evils. And I'm not saying the man was good or great or anything of the kind. I'm just saying that the strategy works, that when you create an image and you create a concept, whether it's true or false, and you repeat it often enough, and it sinks into the minds, the consciousness of the people, then you can manipulate people's minds into whatever policy venture that you intend to endeavor in next, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And so the American people were conditioned. They were conditioned in World War I, for instance. They were told by Wilson, who, by the way, opposed entry into the war, as you know, even in 1916 when he was reelected, said that he was opposed to an American involvement in European affairs. And then, of course, there was a little thing called blackmail and his relationship with another woman, Miss Peck, and then the fact that the Rothschild agents in the United States, of course, needed to have America enter the war after they had already given us the Federal Reserve System, the central bank, which would then finance the war, which would then give them the profits from that war, which would also lead to the Great Depression here, and then the Second War. So you could see this slippery slope, this successive act and acts that would lead to the amalgamation of worldwide control by them. So they set up the boogeyman, and they set up Germany in the teens, the 1900s, and, of course, England was their stooge nation that wanted to basically create war, along with France as agents of the Rothschild, to destroy and basically fight Germany at the time. Even Germany itself and its founders, like Italy, for instance, who unified Italy, Mazzini and people like that, were Illuminists, as you know.
Yes.
So in the biblical scheme of things, they had to create a reason to create a war in Europe that would involve the United States. Now, I don't know in your case how it worked out, but I know myself and other friends of this generation had their grandparents come to America. And where do they come from? Our grandparents came from some of these same countries Europe that then they would be told they had to go back to fight for democracy. And many of us had grandparents who said, we just came here. We're in America to escape all of these wars. We're in America for that very reason, to be independent, to be sovereign, to be people with inalienable rights, so that we wouldn't have to do what the government told us to do, but we would do what was right, to choose to be nations like America, sovereign nations, a beacon of liberty and freedom. So that's what they wanted to do. But Wilson blackmailed, of course, into war, and then bringing on people like Edward Mandel House as their closest advisors, agents of the Rothschild family and the Warburgs and the Kahns and so on, would then propel America into war with that slogan at the time, that slogan that would work as an imprimatur of mind control, and that was peace, you know, and democracy, and the war to end all wars. You remember that phrase?
Oh, yes, yes.
The war to end all wars is what was sold to America and the world. And if we just surrendered our boys, 250,000 American boys in the war, doughboys, that somehow all of the world's problems would be over. And, of course, the American people didn't know what was going on. They had no idea. Newspapers were controlled. The New York Times was controlled. And these big publications, radio was just about to come into its fruition. And, of course, people had no way of really knowing the truth. They didn't have the benefit of the Internet then and that we have today, by the way, and talk radio that we have. So they fell for it. Whether they wanted to go to war or not, here they were drafted. based on lies, went to war, and as you said, the same people who brought us that war were already planning the next one, even as they were saying this was the war to end all wars. Here they were, taking American lives, bringing them to Europe, spilling their blood, using some of the most horrific weapons at the time, chemical warfare, mustard gas, and so forth, and, you know, would just literally eat the skin right off of the bodies, you know, literally. In fact, I have a movie that deals with that in my collection, and it's called Fräulein Doktor, a World War One story, showing the mustard gases and the other gases that are used to basically kill the opponents. Now, regardless of who was at fault in World War One, America had no business to be in that war. We had no right, no divine mission, as Wilson and his advisors would have us believe, to be the policemen of the world. Our founding fathers told us as much, you know, and they said that, and George Washington himself said it so well, that we should beware of entanglements and foreign intrigue, foreign adventurism, because our role, our mission, was not to do what these politicians wanted us to do, to become involved in any activities overseas, but to be a role model of independence, a beacon of light to the world, that we should not be a dictatorship or a monarchy or a democracy, but a republic, that we should have the rule of law, and the law being the Constitution, you know? So then we find that World War One claimed those American lives. Many came home from war. Those that were fortunate enough to live and come home, came home. Families were torn apart. Relationships were destroyed. Girlfriends, husbands, you know, wives left their husbands. And that was the beginning of the decline of the family in America, what World War One did, not only to the nation's sovereignty in breaking that long line of successions of neutrality on the part of America, but it started to eat away at the family unit, you see, and that's Satan's plan. That's the plan of these Edomites and Kenites, is to destroy the family unit. War does that, you know. Well, after World War One, what the Federal Reserve did was to expand the money supply greatly, and they paid themselves handsomely, the banksters, for the war. Wasn't that nice of them? Of course, the next thing we saw was a massive depression as a result of all of this. And then the depression, of course, came, and in Germany and in Italy and in these countries in Europe, because of the Treaty of Versailles and because of the people who were creating the conditions that would pauperize these nations, such as Germany, the next world war would be set. You say they would destroy the German mark, making hyperinflation a reality, and then creating the conditions that would lead to a need for a ruler, a strong ruler, a dictator, who would bring them out of the economic heap. At the same time, in the 1930s, they put in office a man named Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR. Now, many, including myself, have renamed him Fraudulent Deficit Roosevelt. They put him in, elected this man, these same gangsters who financed the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, financed World War One, created the Depression, and then again they came to the rescue and said, well, now we got this wonderful man, this fatherly image, who's going to do a few things for you Americans. And we have this thing called the Depression, and we got a plan. So what do they do? In 1933, one of the first official duties of Roosevelt was to do something that had already been repudiated, and even Wilson, Don, even Wilson would not do himself, because he couldn't get away with it. And that was extend diplomatic recognition to, guess who? Stalin's Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Diplomatic recognition in 1933 meant that the Soviet Union would now be saved from economic collapse, as it was going to do. And had that happened, of course, there would have been freedom, at least certainly not an orderly freedom right away, but there would have been the collapse of the most brutal regime on the face of the earth, the communist Bolshevik dictatorship. Roosevelt saved his buddy Stalin from collapse, saved communism in Russia, created a new wave of persecution and murder and genocide, and then after doing that, the next thing he did, in another year or so, managed to push through Congress here in America, was the Gold Reserve Act.
Yes.
And Americans were told it was illegal for them to own gold. Can you imagine gold bullion, gold coins, turning them into the government in order for the government to make us safe again and keep us from those unscrupulous tycoons on Wall Street? Now, does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
See the parallels already?
That's the first big heist right there.
Yeah, right there. The Brinks robbery was nothing in comparison. So they did that. They passed the Gold Reserve Act through Congress, 1934. They robbed the American people. They robbed the American people, you know, our fathers and grandfathers, of their savings in gold. Told them, we'll give you notes instead. We'll steal your gold. But they didn't call it stealing. They called it redemption. They called it helping the economy. And, of course, they were laughing all the way to their banks. The American people didn't know what was happening to them. And that it was happening. It was happening to them. Now, during this time, America was going through a deep depression in the 1930s. And so once again, behind the scenes, while Americans were being pauperized, soup kitchens were everywhere. Hey, even doctors and lawyers were selling pencils on the street. Even that, they were already then preparing to get America into the next world war, which they said wouldn't happen because the First World War prevented it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible, Don, how they've lied to us and how they've just perpetrated this massive fraud. Well, Roosevelt began, as you know, he campaigned against war. And he said he was against war. He was against his daughters, his girlfriends, his mistresses, his dog, and Eleanor. They were all against war while doing everything he could to prepare us for war. So how did he do it? How did he manage to pull it off? Well, you know, one of the things he was doing was he was preparing Pearl Harbor for an attack. And by that, let me be specific. As you know, there was William Halsey was the fleet admiral in the U.S. Navy.
Oh, do I know.
You know him, right?
Oh, well, he comes right into forward. The McCain research, yes.
Yeah. He wrote a foreword for Admiral Theobald's book, who had written a book about this very process here, that basically showed Tom Kimmel's grandfather, whom I recently had on my show, we've done a new documentary with Tom Kimmel, who is the grandson of Admiral Husband E. Kimmel, the man, along with General Short, whom Pearl Harbor was blamed for. They were blamed for this so-called sneak attack, which is anything but a sneak attack. So William Halsey, he was the fleet admiral, as you said, you know, the U.S. Navy. He wrote a foreword for Admiral Theobald's book. And Theobald, by the way, excuse me, was the commander of the destroyer at the Pacific Fleet under Kimmel and was at Pearl Harbor on the very day of the attack in December 7th of 1941. And this book basically was, Theobald's book was the final secret of the Pearl Harbor story, the Washington connection or contribution, excuse me, to the Japanese attack. And his thesis, Mr. Theobald, that is, was that Franklin Delano Roosevelt alone was responsible for the helplessness of the Pacific Fleet and the unpreparedness of Admiral Kimmel and General Short. Roosevelt had ample warning that the attack would take place at Pearl Harbor, and that he refrained from alerting the Hawaiian commanders because he wanted Japan to make an attack. It was called a backdoor to war. And then men like General Wiedemeyer, I'm sure you heard his name, mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
He was from 1941 to 43. He was now at the time, a general. He was assigned to the War Plans Division of the General Staff of War in the United States, and he was in charge of developing the so-called Victory Program later. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, Wiedemeyer also exposed the Roosevelt instrument of war. He said that Roosevelt used a fraudulent fear strategy to scare the American people into war about alleged plans of the Nazis to topple up American governments and to take over America through South America, as you recall. So Wiedemeyer himself says this was a clever conditioning of the minds of the people to soften the blow of any irrational act which would precipitate 135 million Americans into the European cauldron of death and destruction. He admitted it. Claire Booth, Luce, whom I'm sure you know, also said, and this is what she said, Roosevelt lied us into World War II. So before Pearl Harbor, Don, the American people were almost solidly opposed to our intervention in another European war. Can you blame them? Here they are. They lost their parents. They lost their uncles and aunts, even, who died as a result of seeing their husbands come back dead, come back in caskets, the doughboys, from this war that was supposed to bring about democracy and peace all over the world and did just the opposite. The American public says, we don't want any more holy crusades that Roosevelt spoke of and Wilson had spoken of. And so they said, no, we don't want to go. And the polls were pretty honest in those days, Don. The polls showed Americans almost totally, overwhelmingly in a opposition to any further opportunity to go to war overseas, particularly on the European continent, where they knew these wars were endless, this internecine struggle was going on without any change of policy. American people said, no more, we've had enough. Well, Roosevelt had to find a way. He had to find a way to trick the American public into accepting their quote, God-given role of being the policeman of the world. Well, they did. And that was Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor was the means of changing the mindset of Americans so that Americans would once again feel a sense of assault. After all, their American brethren were being killed on that vessel. They were being killed on vessels in Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Over 2,000, 2,500 of them outright killed in that bombing campaign. And yet, most Americans didn't realize how Roosevelt and his administration, the very top people in his administration, already had decoded both the Japanese diplomatic codes and, more importantly, the spy code, the military code, through something called MAGIC, Operation MAGIC, which they had developed. And by the way, even Hoover and the FBI in the 1930s didn't have Operation Magic. But guess who did have access to it? The British. Wasn't that nice, huh? It just so happened that MI6 in Britain was being fed by Joe Stalin's NKVD agency, and they were in turn feeding the Roosevelt administration so that Americans would be conditioned to go to war against Germany. And that's exactly how it came about, through the back door, by having Japan forced to attack the United States by a very clever so-called negotiation tactic. And by the way, boycotts and the blockades of the Japan area, the islands, by the imposition of sanctions on oil, which Japan needed, obviously, to survive, would be the mechanism by which the United States government would put the squeeze on them and force them into an attack. There were other factors as well, including the sinking of Japanese subs by America. There was a plan to attack Japan from China with American personnel to goad them into that war. So either way, it didn't matter which way they would do it. Pearl Harbor was the most easy, the most obvious, and the most successful way of changing Americans' minds. Just like 9/11, all of a sudden, once again, was used to condition and manipulate the people's minds into hating another people. First it was those slanty-eyed Japs, and now it was those dark-skinned Arabs, those terrible people over there that just hate America because of our TVs and our wonderful, beautiful technologies and satellites, home videos, computer games, all of those things. They hate, and they hate America for having them. Well, it worked. And if it worked then, it will work again, wouldn't it? So
yes.
Here we are. Now we're in World War II through the back door. And the United States government, infested, Don, with communist agents from Stalin, and the Venona intercepts reveal that in 1995 and 6, that indeed the Roosevelt administration probably had more communists in it than Stalin's Soviet Politburo.
Yes. Now, I just got a chat message here, Rick. Don't mean to interrupt, but from Ken Adachi. He called into the show you did with Tom Kimmel and mentioned to Tom that Ken had talked with Dwayne Whitlock.
Yes.
Shortly before his death, and Dwayne had told Ken that he decoded the Pearl Harbor attack about 6 weeks prior to the event. Mm-hmm. He had notified them. Mm-hmm. And I had Ralph Epperson, who you've had on your show many, many times, on Evident Footprints a few times a couple of years ago. And, of course, Ralph has the copy of the Hilo Herald from December 6th. With the headlines, Pearl Harbor may be attacked.
That's right.
They knew
in advance.
Yeah.
They had Operation Magic. They goaded the Japanese into attacking because they were unsuccessful in goading the Germans into an attack. And they knew right then and there that it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. You know, Roosevelt even employed the White Committee, which you may be familiar with, I'm sure. This committee to frighten the American people into going to war, because they were told if they didn't go to war and help England defeat Hitler, then Hitler would surely conquer all, and then after them he would come after us. And of course, nothing could have been further from the truth. In fact, it just couldn't have happened. And men like Charles, Lindbergh had formed the America First Committee. And they were called Nazis, and they were called terrorists, and they were called bigots, and so forth. And yet, all they wanted was to keep America's long-standing foreign policy neutrality in effect. That's all they said, was we should maintain our strength, build up our defense forces, and then be watchful. But to intervene, no, it would be a disaster, and the Soviet Union would win. And sure enough, that's the way it turned out. So today, we see the same application, Don, being used in the Middle East. First, the PNAC documents telling us in advance of 9/11 that we need another Pearl Harbor-type attack. What were they really telling us? They're the same people, the children and the grandchildren of those people that did the same thing years before in order to get America into another war, another world war that they said would not ever happen if we just won World War I. So they did it then, and they did it now. They did it in 2001 with the attacks on the American people in the Twin Towers and the other attacks, including the phony Pentagon attack as well as Shanksville. So it worked. It worked. Again, the American people were enraged as a natural response to the slaughter of 9/11. Again, the media told us, we found out who the culprits were. This time it's not Japan. No, it's these Arabs. It's these Al-Qaedaites. It's these terrible people. And the Taliban has been implicated in Afghanistan. So George Bush told us that we had to go to war again because we were attacked just as surely as Roosevelt said we were attacked on December 7th, 1941. Here we are, parallels that you've asked for from World War One and Two right up to the present. And it is absolutely amazing how that same formula, Don, can be used over and over again to frighten the American people into war. But first they laid the psychological conditioning to condition our minds to hate. And isn't that what we're seeing now with regard to this latest incident, this latest false flag in Texas?
Yes. I'm glad to hear you say that. I labeled it definitely a false flag a couple of nights ago.
Yes.
You see, they ratcheted up the same, or I should say fomented the same hatred for the Muslim community.
Absolutely.
That they did on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Merely implying that the guy that they've charged with the shooting was the guy that did the shooting. And
now we're all talking about this guy as the convict, aren't
yeah.
we?
Well, not all of us, but yeah.
Well, you know what I say, us. I mean yes. in the collective sense, all of the
yes.
bought and paid for talk show hosts and television programs.
Yes, absolutely. You know what comes to mind, and I'm seeing a parallel with this, too. You remember Teddy Roosevelt put together this armada of ships that basically roamed the planet,
yeah.
flexing the naval muscles of the United States. It was upon the graduation. In fact, Halsey's class was the 1906 class at Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, when I was doing my McCann genealogy
yes.
on John Sidney McCann, I found that his grandfather did not go to Annapolis as claimed. He did not attend the Naval Academy. He would have graduated with Halsey, and he would have been one of the notable graduates of that school. The reason he looked 20 years older than Halsey, who had as much naval time in as he did,
mm-hmm.
With one exception, the fact that McCann, John Sidney McCann Sr., who is the grandfather of John Sidney McCain III, the senator from Arizona that ran for the presidency in 2008, was 20 years older, okay? And in fact, that's why he had that weathered look. He
mm-hmm.
had been at sea an extra 20 years. And he was literally traveling on Roosevelt's lines,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yes.
Is that a coincidence?
I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. And then he started this Great White Fleet, he called it. Now, mm-hmm. isn't that an allusion to the Great White Brotherhood, would you say?
Could very well be. It's very possible, I would think so.
You see, I mean, back at that time, they were already setting the stage for America to be the world's policeman.
Yes. Well, and then in the 1890s, I'm sure, you know, you're familiar with the work of Deanna Spingola,
mm-hmm.
who writes, she has her own forum. She's an excellent writer, and she's very honest and forthright. You know, in the 1890s, we had the war for Manila, the 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
And even General MacArthur's father was involved in that corruption and the, you know, the powerful banks that started using America's servicemen as private warriors for their interests. To go to Manila and to rape and pillage the people and to take their resources, just as they've been doing in Latin America and South America, all under the guise of Americanism and defending our interests.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that we were told that oil was the reason, one of the reasons that we had to go to stabilize the Middle East. And now, of course, the Middle East is more unstable than it has ever been.
Yes, yes. And isn't that ironic?
Yeah. It seems almost like maybe that's the way it's supposed to turn out under the dialectical model.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
Now, Well, there was another point I wanted to make, but I forgot what it was.
I do that a lot. Yes.
Well, it happens. It happens every once in a while. We have an analogy. I remember now. With that great white fleet, what did they do with our 10,000 ships? There were 10,000 ships in our navy, we could say, and our merchant marine. And out of those 10,000, 9,800 of those ships are flying the flags of other countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is this something that's discussed openly and before the American public with Congress?
It's not. That's why you hear all these ditto heads calling talk shows, talking like I hate to use some, language, but they are basically idiots who mimic what they've been told, that this is America. This is what we're fighting for. And here we don't even use the American flag. We're fighting under this world government system, this United Nations concept, for the Zionists, for those that are taking us down the road to war and global conflict, and out of it will have to come a world government. I mean, that's pretty obvious to me, and it is to you. And yet, these are these Johnny-come-lately so-called armchair patriots, the breast beaters, the chest thumpers, that will send other people's kids off to war and tell us that that's what America is all about. Well, no, that's not what America was all about. America was founded in antithesis to those reasons. At least we were told that. And, of course, we can trace roots to the, as you know, to the founding of the federal government, the creation of that, from the Articles of Confederation to the Illuminists as well. But be that as it may, let us admit that our policies of non-involvement, neutrality, and the like were always the norm and the mainstay of America's international relations. That is, to not become embroiled in any war, which certainly was not in America's interest. And the only war that would be in America's true interest would be a war to fend off foreign aggression upon our soil. And we didn't see that in World War II. We didn't really see that at all in World War I. And yet, to this day, all of these powerful media instruments, the publishing houses that published the books, that made the movies, that told the school children, that we had to do what we did, because if we didn't, Europeans would be enslaved. And guess what happened? Europeans were enslaved at the end of World War II. And we know about Patton. I'm sure you've done a lot of research into Patton, mm-hmm. enough to tell us what he said in his diaries that were published in 1974 about this war that he said we actually were on the wrong side of it. We shouldn't have been involved at all, but Patton saw through it, and he said, here we are fighting the greatest enemy of America. We are arming, supplying, and fighting for the Soviet Bolshevik communists, and that's exactly what happened now.
Yeah, he said he would take them out. He could take them out pretty quickly.
Yeah, but he spoke too much. He spoke out of class, didn't he, Doug?
He told the truth.
He said he would come home. He would resign the U.S. military, not retire, give up all of his medals, and tell the American people about Eisenhower and what they did, Roosevelt accomplished in World War II. And, of course, that couldn't be allowed to happen. Naturally, heads would roll. The whole disaster would have been exposed right then and there, the fraud of these wars. Obviously, something had to prevent him from coming home in a very neatly arranged accident, quote unquote, certainly accomplished that purpose, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. And Major General Smedley Darlington Butler mm-hmm. met a similar fate, too, didn't he, after
right.
he wrote War is a Racket?
Absolutely.
And
now today, people don't know these things, Don. Most people are not aware of them except through programs such as yours and ours. And, I mean, that's the source right there.
Well, you're definitely driving home many points that come out from time to time, but you're doing it in such a concise manner.
I'm trying. It's not easy.
Well, you know, this Iran thing that's going on, you know, I could equate that almost, you know, we've had a couple of skirmishes in the Persian Gulf region over the last 20 years or so, but what they're planning for Iran mirrors that great white fleet show of muscle.
Yep.
Only it's become much more specific in this sense, and yet it's still the same players, isn't it?
Yes, it's the same players and the same Satan that's behind all of these wars that are leading up to loss of sovereignty, loss of our economic liberty, destruction of our economy, and that means total bankruptcy for us in order for us to be part of the new monetary system they're planning. Isn't that convenient?
Huh? Mm-hmm.
Well, it is. Yeah. Amazing, but it's true. All of this is documented, Don, as you know, and you've done a great job documenting it yourself.
Well, the work's not done. in fact, I've been working on part 8 of the Three Stooges Go to Washington.
Is that right now?
Yeah, that's the one on Hillary Clinton, the third stooge, and it's quite remarkable because I think much of what I discovered you're gonna find is going to dovetail into your research.
Great.
I sense that's going to be the case. I want to let people know that they can get copies of your DVD, and you were running a special at one point. I don't know if you're still doing that.
We're
offering Dr. Kasem Khalil's Wrongly Blamed as part of the package.
Yes.
I've got his book featured on my website. And
that's wonderful.
He's been on the show a number of times, and we've talked about that at great length.
Marvelous
fantastic
research.
Book.
Yes, it is good because it really explains how 9/11 was perpetrated and who benefited from it. It wasn't this imaginary Al-Qaeda group. It wasn't the Taliban, obviously. It wasn't Arabs or Muslims that benefited from it. It was Israel. And we know that Bibi Netanyahu, who was one of the most evil cutthroats in the history of Israeli terror, was behind 9/11. He was involved in it directly with Cheney and with Bush, there's no question, based on the evidence that's been amassed by Dr. Khalil in that book. And this is from a combination of sources of media, including the so-called mainstream media. The trail, Don, led right back to Jerusalem. There's no question about it.
Yes, and many of the things going on right now, even with the swine flu and the bird flu and these patents and
yes,
and DynCorp and these international corporations that are trying to bring paramilitary police into
yes.
our rural towns under the guise of protection, and it's just racketeering. It's organized crime is all it is, and they're using the color of law and the military might of you know, this new world order behind the scenes military industrial complex as the pretext to pull this off.
Well, they used fear to get the people to go to war in the first place. They're using fear very successfully, I think, to frighten the American people to go and get their swine flu shots. Maybe not nearly as much as the media would have us believe, but certainly, you know, the numbers have increased. The people who are frightened to death that they might catch this H1N1 virus, and they're rolling up their sleeves, taking their children in vast numbers, their parents and grandparents, and it sickens me. It angers me to see these poisons and toxins now injected, in many cases even forcibly, like that young boy recently in Wyoming, forcibly into their bodies, whether their parents approve or whether they approve of it or not. This is tyranny, Don. This is tyranny and despotism like we have seen in these other countries that we supposedly fought to liberate.
Yeah, and that it harkens back to the 1918 flu epidemic that hit Spain, and again, you know, the U.S. military was injected, and the disease spread. Of course, they don't give us all the facts, and they've ratcheted this up to where they're just dumping these microorganisms on whole countries. They're not even waiting to give the people the shot. The shot's going to be the booster for all the infection that they're taking in.
Yes.
Just by what's in the environment.
Absolutely.
Well,
by the way, I forgot to fully answer your question. You asked me about that offer.
I was coming back to that
okay,
right now.
Go ahead.
We're reading
I'll let
our
you
minds.
Complete
go ahead.
The sentences. Go ahead, Don.
Well, no, I want to allow you to give that information out so people can order it. So, folks, grab your pen and paper or pencils and papers and write down the information Rick's going to give you.
And then when you get your DVD copy, probably tomorrow or the next day, when you have me on again sometime and next month, we'll be able to talk about it fully. But for people who want both the DVD, which I have sold on my program on Republic Broadcasting, I've sold it for $20 postpaid with delivery confirmation tracking. And if you wanted that with the book that Dr. K has offered, that's a $20 book, 450-something pages, Wrongly Blamed, get both for $30 delivered. It will be shipped media mail because it's heavy, the book, and the DVD will go with it. So you save yourself quite a bit of money there, especially on shipping and on delivery confirmation, not to mention $10 off the book. So I'll be happy to help people. And if they wish to order, they can just go right to PayPal if they want and place an order. To my email address is all they need, $30. Postpaid for both, and that's rick458@cox.net. R-I-C-K, rick458@cox.net, and that's the email address at PayPal, or they can write to me at the same email address, and I'll give them an address to send the check or money order or whatever, too. You know, cash, whatever they want to do.
Okay, or that's gold, gold pieces.
There you go. I don't mind. I'll take it. I'll take it, Don. But okay. that's the offer I've made. So without hawking it, just to tell people they can do it.
Yes,
if they want.
I haven't seen your DVD, but I know it's going to be fantastic. Just knowing the kind of work.
You'll find it to be very good because it's all basic. It's documented, and you'll find some interesting newsreel footage in there. You'll see the American boys in World War I, the Doughboys, and you'll see scenes from World War II. The propaganda of the War Department to enlist young men and get them to go and kill and kill and kill and be killed for the international bankster gangsters. It's a tragedy, but you know what? It is an uplifting video because even though you see the tragedies and you hear the commentary, it's going to make people think now about these next wars and how they must stay out of them and not make themselves any more of a footstool for these criminals.
Yes, I agree. Now, Rick, with your permission, I'm going to set up a page on my website, and I'll do it in the book section. Sure. I'll probably have to add books and DVDs to it.
That's all right. That's fine. Whatever you wish to do, Don.
I'll put your contact information there and a little paragraph on the special.
Sure.
I've got a few of Dr. K's books up there, been up there for well over a year already. And,
that's wonderful.
I can say it's worth it just to read his book. But
tremendous mind and tremendous research talent Dr. K has.
Oh, yeah, no doubt
He's
about it.
He's a real asset for us, I believe.
Well, we're about out of time here. I want to thank you for staying up so late. I know, you do a two-hour show every night on Republic Broadcasting Monday.
Well, first I was tired, Don, but now I'm all wound up.
Well, the last time you were on the show, you were choking on a piece of celery. Do you recall that?
I remember. I avoided it this time like the plague.
I remember that because it wasn't too long ago I finally got around to putting that archive up on my website. But that was such a fantastic show. And I want to encourage folks to listen to your show. You have some great guests. I got to hear Lindsey Williams preach yesterday.
He was pretty good last night, wasn't he?
He was on fire.
He really started letting it come forward.
Mm-hmm.
501c3 churches and Then he talked about the Bible and how people misquoted when trying to justify serfdom in America today, you know, owing or paying Caesar what's due Caesar. Well, Caesar was the king, and we're not supposed to have a king in America. We're supposed to have a republican form of government, aren't we?
Yes, we're a constitutional republic, not a
democracy. We're supposed to obey those laws of the republic that allow us, under God, to do what we please with our money, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
So you see, he's right on that, and I think he really engendered quite a bit of opportunity for people to think about that. And I credit Lindsay Williams with doing the best he can under the circumstances. He has a family, has a nice son, and so forth. And, you know, he was threatened. He was threatened to take down his website or else. He was reaching too many people, as you are, and we are trying to do. And, you know, that's what happens. But I know what course of action I will take in that event, and I think you will probably do what I'm going to do, and that's to continue to stand up for Christ.
Yes, and, you know, it's... It's about the truth. Isn't it amazing
yes.
how fearful somebody can be about the truth getting out?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
Satan
that,
fears the truth, Don, and he hates it with a passion.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. It's really an honor. I just love listening to you speak. I love listening to your show. And it's quite unpredictable with the amount of calls that you get as to what can happen, but you just
well,
always...
you know, I try to entertain anyone who calls within reason, and we entertain people, you know, who don't always agree and don't agree with our guests because that's what freedom's all about. And, you know, you just can't allow certain people to try to worm their way into the program as fronters for Mossad and other groups, CIA and so forth, to try to throw us off of our mission. And that's what they've tried to do. You know, one in particular in Massachusetts who was trying to do that, sow the seeds of dissension within Republic, as I'm sure you've experienced here. And you know their MO, so we just have to keep them out. But everyone else is welcome to call who's sincere and wants the truth, Don.
Yes, and your show airs Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Eastern time, it runs from 10 p.m. to midnight. And
yeah.
Pacific Coast time, that would be 7 to 9.
That's it.
Those lucky dogs.
Yes, right.
They can still watch the boob tube after that, can't they?
Well, the only boob tube I watch now is just a classic television, you know, certain shows that I happen to like in the past, golden era television, and I stay away from all current TV programming, and that includes most of the so-called news programs as well.
Yes. One pertinent question I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
You know, what comes to mind when you talk about a documentary, say, like, something about World War II, going to the theater, and I can remember this when I was a kid, where they would show the old Hearst newsreels and the RKO newsreels, the mm-hmm. updates on what was going on in the war. And, of course, you see cannons going off, and you see the Marines and the Army landing on the shores of a particular country, say the beaches of Normandy, for example. And there's a narration there, and there's certainly the picture is saying one thing. And they use that a lot to mislead the public many times.
Yes.
Did you use any of that old footage, or did you find it difficult to even acquire any of that?
Well, no. I mean, a lot of it's in the archives now. You know, Castle News propaganda and Pathé and, you know, some of them official films. But they just fed. The military, the OSS, fed these studios with propaganda and just they narrated them and put them out. I didn't use many of them. All I did was use footage from the archives from the war and World War One to try to show people a little bit more along with me speaking, because I was speaking from a desk. I was also reading from these Dan Smoot reports, much of his wisdom, and at the end I listed the bibliography, the source material of many books. You know, there are many people who have written before in 1940s and 50s, men like Arthur Bryant you know, from England, a scholar in current events at the time, and they were referred to, you know, their books and writings. But you're right, the newsreels, so-called newsreels, were nothing but propaganda reels, and you remember how Walt Disney Studios was taken over by the Roosevelt government, and there were military guards there telling them what they had to produce. I mean, this was a lockdown. This was a shutdown of our freedom. These people had no freedom in World War II, and here it was all in the name of liberation. They were creating a police state in America,
mm-hmm.
just like they've done under 9/11, the same thing.
Yes, and, you know, I guess this is worth bringing up, and it may inflame some people because, you know, we've been sold this bill of goods that America is the land of opportunity. And so we had open borders, we had open arms, and, you know, you had brought this up earlier, you weren't sure what my situation was as far as my ancestors go, but my grandparents fought in wars. My father fought in World War II. My grandfather yep. fought in World War I.
Same here.
Came here for a better life.
Right.
Literally, you know, they were refugees in that sense because their lands were war torn.
That's right.
Macedonia, Slovakia.
Mm-hmm.
I have, you know, some Germans, even some Dutch, in my family. Different mm-hmm. percentages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of I kid around and say I'm Japtalian actually. what I've discovered in many of these people who have played a major role in terrorizing this country, and before the word terror was used, infiltrating the country, and becoming citizens in some cases, but many times all they had to do was bribe their way through the INS at Ellis Island. And they bragged about doing this. They bragged about how they were going to do this in the protocols of the Elders of Zion. They talked about how they're going to corrupt the very people who were responsible for preventing this from happening.
Yes.
And you can see it in the handwriting of these records, in the obfuscation or the total destruction or the redactions of certain documents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul Warburg, I tracked, coming into the country in 1903, and they
mm-hmm.
were calling him Mr. Warburg.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a representative of U.S. Steel, and yet U.S. Steel hadn't even been formed yet.
Isn't that amazing? And he was the first chairman of the Federal Reserve?
Well, he was the guy that penned it.
Yeah.
You know,
so he also became chair, didn't he?
Yes, yes. So,
isn't that something?
So we were set up from the beginning. But,
oh, yeah.
But you see, repeatedly, and I found this, you know, I don't fashion myself as a genealogist per se, but I have a knack for finding the needle in the haystack. And
you certainly do.
And I discovered a pattern, and none of these people have parents, none of them have birth dates, none of them have birthplaces, but you can see the amount of corruption that was behind legitimizing who they were, and it was done very poorly. Really, they've never been legitimized in the true sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you find that someone who just came into the country a couple of years later all of a sudden has appeared before a circuit court judge and been sworn in and made a naturalized citizen, even though there was a 10-year waiting period for that to occur. Even today, I think it's the same. These laws mm-hmm. are just thrown out the window, aren't they?
Yeah, they certainly are. You know, laws are for the little people, aren't they? Hmm?
Yes, and so they sold this concept of, well, America is the land of opportunity, and I'm not saying that...
Well, it is for them.
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's intended to mean for us, for anyone who comes
supposedly,
here.
Supposedly, huh? Yeah.
And I'm not against people coming from foreign countries. That's how this country was built. But tell us the truth about how this country was stolen from others when they came here.
Mm-hmm.
That's conveniently left out, isn't it?
And you know, that's true. And the thing is, though, the first people that came here, originally immigration was for a particular group of Europeans, but it was also because of religious persecution, Don.
Mm-hmm.
People were fleeing from the so-called, you know, divinity scholars, the Church of England, the Episcopal Church, the Catholic Church, they were fleeing from these patriarchal organizations because they wanted to worship God as they saw fit. Now, today, they don't come here to worship God. They come here to worship money, the American way of life, so-called, and that is fading fast from the scene. So they come here illegally. I'm talking about the illegals now. And they come here breaking the law so that they can essentially get something that is not theirs. And to get on welfare, to get on public assistance, and to work under the table. So the fact of the matter is that's part of the, as you said, the protocols is to destroy the countries, to make them just literally collapse from within. And that's, isn't that where we are today? That's
yes,
exactly where we are.
And all the while they're doing it and thieving themselves, they're denying that this is even going on.
Isn't that amazing? Huh? What gall? Huh? What matzah? Unbelievable.
Well, I look forward to seeing your DVD. I want to encourage all the listeners out there to get a copy of it and get Dr. Kasem Khalil's Wrongly Blamed with that.
Absolutely, and also to keep supporting you, Don, and your great program, your great voice, and the way you produce the program is very, very, very much of a humbling experience, and I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it this morning with you, early morning here.
I'm glad you did. I'm honored, and next time, if you want, you have my permission
yes.
to bring a whole package of celery with you.
I don't think I'll do that because I'll wind up choking again. I don't want to be embarrassed, but I will be able to discuss with you once you've seen the DVD what you thought, okay?
Okay, yes, I definitely will. And you can rest assured I'll have a page up on my website, too.
That's fine.
For that.
Thank you so much.
Rick Adams, I'm so grateful for having you on, so honored. And keep up the great work that you are doing. You are the Paul Revere of radio. You really are, and you were uncensored tonight, so.
Amen, and thank you. God bless you and your efforts too, Don. Thank you.
All right, you have a good night, and we hope to have you back again soon.
Amen. Thank you, and God bless.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Take care. Sure. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, Rick Adams. You can order his DVD with the Wrongly Blamed book by Dr. Kasem Khalil, $30. We'll get it. Email Rick at Rick, R-I-C-K, 458 at cox.net. That's R-I-C-K, 458 at cox.net. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting this show, along with blogtalkradio.com. Want to wish all the military personnel around the world a very happy Veterans Day, and take care. We hope to see you back here real soon. In the meantime, I'd also like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and of all you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me again tomorrow night when my special guest will be none other than Mr. Ken Adachi. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.